Let me bang.
I do let you bang.
Hey, let me bang you, Jesus, man.
I let you bang.
I let you bang.
Greetings, marriage and virgins.
Go for Jesus. No, for gay Jesus, people.
Hey, I'm not surprised, motherfuckers.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is time once again for your favorite mixed martial arts podcast. Recording out of Los Angeles, California, it's MMA Roasted with Adam Hunter.
Who the fuck is that guy?
What's up, people? Welcome to our brand new MMA Roasted podcast. Me, Adam Hunter. I'm here with Bill Dawes. I think you're in Texas, right?
No, I'm in L.A.
You're in L.A. Nice. I am in Minnesota at the House of Comedy about to – you know, it's funny. Like, I don't know about you, but I always try to leave – you know, like, normally we have a 7 o'clock show on a Thursday, right? And
yeah.
One of the good things about COVID is no radio. Like, because I used to have to hate getting in earlier – and having to do, like, you know, 6 o'clock in the morning radio, because it just fucks up your whole thing. But I'm always worried that if I, like, get in at, like, a 4 o'clock flight or, like, a 3 o'clock flight, that I'm going to be – it's going to be late. I'm going to miss the first show. So I always leave the night before, because those shows are almost never canceled.
Yeah.
So I left. So I leave at 1 o'clock in the morning, but then I get in at 6 o'clock in the morning. And then normally you get to a hotel, and they don't check you in until 1 or 2. So
yeah.
I just go there and I'm like, I want an early check-in. And you're like, oh, sorry, nothing's ready for, like, you know, 5 hours. So I'm like, oh, I'll wait in the lobby. And I set up my computer and everyone that walks in, I'm like, hey, how's it going? Hey, how was your day? Annoy the fuck out of it. Within 6 minutes, they're like, a room magically opens up. They're like, get this guy out of the.
That's hilarious, man. I love that tactic.
It almost always works. The only time it didn't work was in Portland, Oregon. Because there were literally, like, homeless people living there anyway. So people were – I just, like, fit in. And people were already living there. I'm like, what room? I'm like, you in the room waiting for a room? No, actually, this is my house. I'm like, oh, jeez. but, yeah, so then I got – you know, I get in. But then so I got it last night at, like, what, 1 in the morning? Oh, I got it at 6 o'clock in the morning. And then I'm like, well, I got no sleep. I had a middle seat. And I'm like, do I sleep all day?
I know. It's the worst.
Because if
I sleep, you might as well power through it.
Because if I sleep all day,
you can one night of sleep, and then you can sleep in tomorrow.
Well, the thing is, if I sleep all day, like if I go back to bed after this and sleep till like 7 o'clock to show, like the show might be better because I'll be rested. But then really not, because it's like doing a show at 1 in the afternoon. Like my whole so I'm like, all right, I'll stay up and I'll do work and this and that, but I'll be kind of tired for this show. I mean, maybe sometimes I'm better tired anyway. Because sometimes when you're tired, you just basically just say whatever's on your mind, and it's the best show ever because you're not thinking, you know. Or do I stay up? It's just always like I'm like 2 hours ahead of where I was. That's always sometimes the hard part, is that, like,
yeah.
Getting back. I always want to get back as soon as possible. I want to get back to – go on.
Yeah. I think it's always better just to power through and don't sleep, because – I just think naps screw you up for shows, number one. And number two, sometimes when you're in that really crazy, hallucinogenic, like, sleep deprivation mode,
yeah,
you could have some real fun. Mix that with alcohol. Come on, man.
You can have fun, but I've also, like, said the same joke twice before, not knew what city I was in, or I'd be like, oh, it's good to be here in Jacksonville. I'm in fucking, like, Wyoming, or like, I've done a joke about a cruise ship, and I'm on a cruise ship. So, I mean, there's, like, sometimes –
you open the show by saying, like, hey, I'm a stoner. And then every time you fuck up, you just, like I said, I'm a stoner, you're gonna laugh.
Yeah, that is true. What else is going on? So that's that. Last night we had the memorial for Foo and for Rico.
Oh, yeah.
Two of my friends that died. I mean, I didn't really know Foo that well. I booked him once or twice at Dime Bar. Nice guy. But I knew Rico really well from the haha. And that was crazy. It was just sad. You know,
does everyone know who listens to this podcast what you're talking about right now?
We mentioned it before about how 4 comedians did cocaine that were laced with fentanyl, and 3 of them died. Kate Quigley lived. It was just awful, awful situation. And it was just such a senseless death. I mean, talk about pointless. I mean, holy shit. And, you know, some people say, well, you shouldn't do drugs. I'm like, nobody that I know has ever done a line of cocaine thinking that, like, there was a chance it might be laced with fentanyl. I mean, that wasn't even, like, a thing. I mean, that's like a I mean, you know.
Not to mention the fact that I didn't think you could die from just snorting fentanyl.
I didn't realize what fentanyl is. I mean, but it's like smoking weed. I mean, look, I obviously smoke weed. I don't do cocaine. I did cocaine maybe once or twice in my life, and I got super depressed afterwards and hated it. The high wasn't worth the low for me personally. I'm not going to judge people that do it. Although, if you do cocaine, you're probably not making the best decisions in your life. If you do it like on like a regular, I've never been anybody who's like, man, that guy's a cokehead. We should work with him. You know, it's like.
Yeah.
So.
But then Ian Edwards has that bit about, like, you know, basically the Cleveland Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Like, if it weren't for cocaine, there'd be no one in there. You know what I mean? Like, some of the best created on cocaine. And some of the best comics that we love. I mean, Robin Williams is coked out of his mind during his best specials.
Yeah. Richard Pryor. I mean, cocaine doesn't necessarily make you lazy. I'm not going to – it's one of those things. So, like, people do cocaine and then they do productive shit. They just sometimes make bad decisions. Or sometimes they think that their decision-making is a lot better than it is. Like, I mean, even with weed sometimes, I'll smoke and I'll write shit down. I'm like, this is the funniest shit. And then when I'm sober, I'm like – huh?
What?
Like, especially if I'm just writing, I have to write out the whole thought. But I just like put like little glimpses of notes. Like, I'll just, I'm lazy with the writing. Like, I just go, and then I'm like, I'm looking at it like, what the, like, I don't even know what I was trying to think. But sometimes, like, I'm sure you know as a comic, your best thoughts come at night. And you're like, oh, I'll remember it in the morning. And then fucking 7 hours the next day trying to think about, now you missed the whole day because you're trying to think of that one thing that you thought of.
It's
Just. It's just, you have to. So coaching started again with like wrestling, right? I started coaching again. I wasn't going to do it. And I'm like, I'm doing it. The kids have to wear masks while wrestling.
Do you have the same group of kids or the whole new batch?
It's a whole new batch, except for two kids. And like the good news about having like a lot of kids that know nothing is that sometimes it's easier to coach them from ground zero and build up because they're going to learning. But they're so far away from where they have to be. Sometimes for me, the hardest thing to coach is against a kid that's kind of good, especially because he thinks he's really good, because you don't want to fuck up what he's doing. At the same time, you know it's not going to work at a higher level, you know?
Yeah.
Like, oh, that sometimes is hard, like, to take, because, like, there are many different methods of coaching. However, like, the hardest thing I've ever did, though, was when I was coaching my first season. My first season I was coaching because I got this job off Craigslist. That's where I got the job, like 13 years ago. They're like, looking for a wrestling coach, right? I'm like, 15 years ago, I was like, I know how to. So I go down there, and the first thing they asked me, like, all right, so you got the job, but what do you know about the adult transgender wrestling league? I go, I don't know what you're talking about. I'm like, so that, then they showed me the thing. It was like naked adults wrestling in Hollywood. And they were going to try to use the mat at the school to have their practices.
Oh, my God.
Which would have been just – imagine, like, parents coming in for, like, you know, parents, and then you see a bunch of naked people. I mean, that's just – so I got the job, right? But I had already booked, like, a gig. First of all, there were, like, the walls weren't padded. That was also a huge problem. Kids are running headfirst in the wall and crying. And normally, like, I could be like, you know, just be, but when a kid, but I'm like, no, the walls, I'm like, I can't coach here unless the walls are padded. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Like, the kids, every wall, at least make three of the walls padded. And then I was leaving for like a week or two. I was leaving for like a week or two to go to Africa, or maybe 3 weeks. So I needed an assistant coach. There was a guy named Dixon Matthews, who's a comic. I don't know if you know Dixon. He used to be Nick Swartz's opening act. Nice guy. And he's like, oh, I used to wrestle, blah, blah, blah. So I'm like, oh, so he came to a practice and somebody knew what he was talking about. So then come to find out that he knew WWE wrestling. He was actually in the ECW as like, his name was Big Dicks Halfway In. That was his name. Dude, I come back and I'm like, well, so we had a match. Like the first I come back, kids are throwing in fucking camel clutches, like figure fours. They're doing like flying elbows. I'm like, dude, what the? I thought you wrestled before. He's like, I did. I'm like, dude, I don't think a guy wrestled for 1 minute. Like, he everything he was showing was like not a move that you could have done.
Yeah. Was the character that I did him pinned based on that guy? No.
Yes. Yes. 100%.
Was it really?
Yes. 1,000% based on that guy. And I love the guy, but he just didn't know. I bet like a couple times, like, what did you teach today? Oh, we did tug of war. I'm like, or we did blind wrestling. I'm like, bro, you know, the kids have eyes. Like, just the craziest shit.
Yeah.
But it was, I mean, yeah. So then I had to go to every single practice and like have three practices a week. Normally two a week, like four a week. I'm like, we got to catch these kids up to like, so that was that. And then, you know, the kids wanted to wrestle in the high school. So like, cause there was no high school team. So I lobbied with the kids and the parents. We got a high school team. And they got a coach. This coach was great. The nice guy, Randy, like knew 1,000 moves, wrestled with Jake Shields, I think at SF State, like knew a lot of shit. Anyway, he had a team that was like really good. And he was like one of those guys, no nonsense. If somebody would come late, he's like, you're out. Like,
yeah.
Fuck that. Like, so but then he dies of brain cancer. Like one day, jeez. He's 27, he's driving, he has a headache.
27?
27, goes to the hospital, finds out he has brain cancer, like 3 months to live. Like, I was trying everything. We did a sprawl challenge, awareness, and all this kind of treatment. So then the kids had no coach, right? And there was a guy that was my assistant coach that seemed kind of normal to me, except for he got kicked out of New Jersey Coaching Association, like banned from all of Jersey. But he was in, like, the Philadelphia Coaching Hall of Fame. So I didn't realize he had an anger problem. So like, we would coach, and he would start yelling, and I had to tell him, hey, man, we're yelling two different things. Or he'd be, like, six matches at once. You could just hear him screaming. Like, just – anyway, so he got the job. Lo and behold, he was coaching women's girls JV softball. He got mad. He took a bat and threw it and hit a girl in the leg, like, in first base.
Oh.
So he got banned. So then my other friend, Aldo, who's, like, one of my best friends.
Aldo, yeah.
So Aldo has, like, a scar from here to here from, like, a bar fight that he got into. He was an ex-Chippendale, I don't know what I don't think he ever had a job that had a W-9. Let's put it that way. Like, he did some shady jobs. I loved Aldo. But he would say things like, I'm like, you're not allowed to talk to the kids like the way, like one kid was like, hey, you know, coach, blah, blah, blah. And he's like, quit doing that stupid voice. The kid's like, that's my voice. You know, like, Aldo was just like, but Aldo was like a man's man, like drives a Harley, like just, yeah. Like put in my whole wrestling room for me, like by himself. It's just like, he's like that guy. Anyway,
yeah.
He got kicked out because I guess there was one parent was having his kid do his own program, like, and not Aldo's program. And basically, like, he lost a wrestle off, but it was a controversial call. And the father wanted to do the best out of three, and Aldo said no. The father pulled the kid and then confronted him at a wrestling tournament. And Aldo was like, get the fuck out of my face before I beat your ass. I'll kill you. This is on video. So,
oh.
Like, Aldo got, like, fired. Meanwhile, Aldo's friend, right, also from Philly, this guy Bruno, who works, like, on a different school. He's also Italian, whatever. He got in trouble because he was calling these kids, like, I guess there was, like, two kids. There was a white kid named Tom on his team and a black kid called Tom. And he had the kids calling the black kid Black Tom, which, you know, in 2021, you can't have everyone calling a kid Black Tom.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then, like, the mom complained about – Tom's mom complained. But his go-to emoji was, like, a black thumbs up. He didn't know that. So he's like, sorry. And gave him a black. So all those friends, Bruno got in trouble. So now they finally have another coach. They have this lawyer who's a really good coach, who's a nice guy. But the problem is he doesn't go to the school. Like, you need somebody in the school to coach.
Yeah.
Like, you need somebody –
lawyer ended up being a pedophile. I thought it was gonna be another thing that happened. No, okay. Right.
There is another person that I can talk about, but me and you both know him. But I'm going to
yes.
I'm going to leave him out of the story.
I was wondering if you're going to bring him up. Can you just make a face?
Yeah, I don't want. There is another person, but I just out of respect to him and the situation. Yeah, you know.
What's funny, Adam, is to think that like you are the most sane wrestling coach that you know. I mean, you're pretty sane, but you're also a little insane. So that just goes to show, like, wrestlers are pretty nuts.
The hard part for me is the mask now, because it's hard enough to get these kids out wrestling, right?
They practice in masks?
Yeah.
That is ridiculous, man.
And we had a teacher come in and yell, you have to wear your mask, so we're not going to have a program. And I had to kind of talk to the main guy and be like, listen, man, Like, these kids don't have to wrestle. Like, they don't have – they're going on their own free will. They're trying their hardest. They're not in shape. They took 2 years off. They're not – we don't, like, have former wrestlers. Their parents weren't wrestlers. Now they got to fucking have a mask on in this little room. Like, man, like, you know.
And once they start, like, it's not rolling, whatever. Once they start wrestling, the mask comes off, right?
Mask comes off. But this is how stupid this is how stupid wrestling is in high school California. The kids could have a match. They could have a match with no mask. At the end, they can't shake hands. Like, they just sweat on each other for 6 minutes.
Yeah.
In every possible position, and they have to raise their own hand. The ref can't raise their hand. God. I don't know why a kid doesn't raise. If I lost, I would just raise my hand. Like, how do you?
Oh my God.
Dude, we had a kid one time show up. This kid, I love this kid, Mookie. He was a half black kid, heavyweight. By heavyweight, I mean like 160, you know, middle school, 170.
Yeah, yeah.
So he shows up to match. I wasn't there. The kids just like told me what happened. So he had like one practice and it was the middle of the season. And then, you know, at heavyweight, you could throw a kid in there because I just showed him like an Iowa. I showed him one move and he'll win. And the kid kind of freaked out. Because the match started, and he starts going like this, you know, and the ref looked at the goal, like, this is what you're teaching? Like, we didn't, like, the kid was ready to, like, throw down.
I love that, man.
Yeah.
Sorry, I was a couple minutes late. There you go.
All good. We had another kid, by the way, before we get to our amazing guest, Casey O'Neill, who's undefeated, not only undefeated as a pro, She won her last 5 amateur fights, and she's sideways. Oh. So the only thing is, if you could move your camera as much as I like to. Yeah, there you go. She's won 12 in a row, this girl. Actually, I'll tell the rest of the story later. We have Casey here. Casey, how are you? What's going on?
I'm good. How are you guys?
Good, good, good. Now, I had the honor. Like, I always knew you were good. You know, I always knew you were good based on your 2 UFC fights, which you got 2 finishes. But I did a little bit of history research on you. You're a certified badass. You are what, 23 years old. You might be the next big thing in MMA. You know that, right?
Yeah, you know, like, sorry. I feel like in the regional scene, I was becoming sort of like this different person. And then once I got into the UFC, it was like the nerves came back and everything like that. But like you said, I got 2 wins in there now. So I feel like I'm getting my feet sort of planted, and I know what's coming and what to expect. So I think that you're only going to see better and better every time for me, and I definitely don't see myself losing anytime soon.
What's the difference between the regional scene and UFC? Like, what have you noticed in terms of the fights? Like, what's the biggest difference that surprised you, maybe?
So basically, like, in the regional scene, when I was fighting in Australia, obviously I won, I think, like, I won my last 5 amateurs, and then I had my first 3 professional fights in Australia. So by the time it came to my professional fights, I already knew I was the shit. I knew that nobody in Australia could beat me, and that, like, I was the best that was going to come out of Australia. And then once I started moving overseas, obviously you start thinking, like, oh, you know, like, this is a whole different thing. These girls are different. I haven't seen them fight as much as I had, because I went to every show in Australia regional wise. So yeah, it was just a little bit different. Also, like, a much bigger stage, right? So, like, the bigger the stage is, the harder you fall if you were to fall. So there was, like, the nerves for that as well. And yeah, now I think that it almost feels like the regional scene again, getting ready for this one. I feel really confident.
Well, your first fight, they threw you in against a girl that, like, I always thought, like, she's like 4-4, but I'm like, this is the best 4-4 fighter of all time. Shayna Dobson is no joke. She's just a girl that had, like, some bad luck, bad matchups. Like, I remember from The Ultimate Fighter, and you, like, must have landed, what, like, 300 unanswered blows on her, to the point where you looked at the ref like, the fuck do I gotta do, right? Is that what, I mean, keep telling me, like, talk to me through that, the whole fight.
Yeah, so obviously that was my first one. It was a little bit different being in that apex with absolutely nobody in there. Now there's, like, a little bit of a crowd. But my first fight, there was nobody. So it felt like you were fighting on a TV set. It felt really strange. That first round was, like, a little bit daunting standing there. It was cold in there, you know, everything was a little weird. And she hit me with probably the hardest left hook I've ever been hit with in my life. She is so strong. I was like, oh, we're in a fight. Okay, so took her down over and over again and just kept, you know, pounding her on the ground. And that's sort of like my style anyway. I like to be relentless and push a pace on people and make them break. And there was like a point at the end of the first round where I started to see her break. And then I knew that when we went into the second round, I was going to be able to just take her down easier again. And I was going to be able to finish it there.
Your next fight against Procopio, I don't know, am I butchering it?
Procopio.
Sorry, I'm. She won the first round. You thought she won the first round. You won the second. Did you know that going to the third? Like, if I have to win this, or I might lose this fight.
No, I mean the first round was very close. I think, you know, like I was a little bit in my head once again. I think I start slow. So just trying to find my footing and everything. And I knew that those knees to the body really hurt her, because every time I hit them in the first round, I could hear her sort of go, ugh, like a little bit in the clinch. So I knew I broke her once again. And I knew that it was like a matter of time until I got the finish. And then once I got into that crucifix position in the third, and she turned around and gave her back and put her neck up in the air, I was like, straight away. So
were you surprised she didn't tap and went to sleep?
No, because she's a black belt and I was a purple belt. So I think that there's sort of that like ego thing where you don't want to tap to someone who's a lower rank than you, I guess. So, I mean, I wouldn't have tapped either. I probably would have went to sleep.
Bill, you're a brown belt. Have you ever tapped to like a purple belt or a blue belt?
No, I completely know what she's saying, because I've had situations where I've been with like, and this is not like a sexist thing, but I've been with women and I'll give them the position like a clock choke. I gave this woman, this Russian jiu-jitsu, who's really strong, I gave her the clock choke, and I was like, well, at the last minute I'll get out of it. And then in my head I got out of it, but that was the dream I had while I was unconscious.
Really? She put you but out?
She put me out. And
that's,
I woke
awesome.
Up
awesome
on my knee, looking really confused and hurt and ashamed. And yeah, it's because I was like, there's no way. I think she was a 4-stripe blue belt at the time. Like, there's no way this woman's gonna be able, this girl's gonna be
was
able
this
to submit.
In front of was it like Henzo there when that happened?
No, luckily it was in L.A. because Kenzo would let me hear the end of it. But but yeah, people, you know, it's great. It's a great thing to happen. I think everyone should be choked out at least once or twice in their life, because it's so humiliating. I mean, you must have been, Casey, you must have been choked out before during training, right?
Yeah, I actually got choked out once in a competition with a bow and arrow, a super tight bow and arrow at the Melbourne Open in Australia in front of everyone. And I had a similar dream, you know, I got out and I armbarred her and the crowd was cheering for me and I won. And then I woke up and I was on my back with someone standing over me, shaking my legs. And I was like, oh no.
Bill, did you fall in love with her afterwards or no?
No, I was really mad because she actually uploaded the video onto her Instagram. So then the next competition that I had with her, I sort of like got her in an ankle lock and popped her foot, because I was like,
oh my God. So that's the thing about you, King Casey, is some people just have that meanness in them. And like, even your last fight when you choked the girl out, you like were like, get the fuck off me. You pushed her, like, which I gotta say, I kind of felt, I'm a middle school coach, I would have been like, hey man, like, act like you've been here before, you don't have to like push the person off you. But as a competitor and what you're going through, I've never had your experience, but I could probably see, hopefully identify with the fact that you're like, no, I'm the fuck it, right? Is that what you were kind of going through?
I mean, I guess, like, I put it this way in my own head, that if it happened to me, I would expect her to do the same thing, you know? So people got to remember, you know, I got a lot of hate for that, but people got to remember, 10 weeks of camp, you're, like, getting ready for this one person, you know? You're in a fight. Everything like is important. Every decision you make in the fight is important. And when you win and you get a finish like that, like on the biggest stage, your emotions take over. So to be honest, I didn't even really know that I was pushing her off. I was just trying to get up and celebrate. And yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, no, it looked like you were like next. You look like a badass. I mean, if you were
I have no issue with what I did. You know, people do, they should watch tennis or some shit, because this is mixed martial arts.
Well, let's get into that, because I read about you. So your parents put you in soccer. but you kept slide tackling and pulling everyone's hair.
Mm-hmm. So I actually started in ballet when I was young. I was doing ballet and kickboxing at the same time. And I would just like stomp into the ballet and just jump around and, you know, try and do like just like kicks and everything. I wasn't doing ballet at all. So they decided, okay, we need her to do soccer instead because she's just too aggressive for ballet. And I went into my soccer and I couldn't like separate the two. So it would be like slide tackles with hair pulling or grabbing the shirt, or it would be a double leg, or it would be something just like really dirty because I couldn't separate the two. And eventually I got kicked off of every soccer team close enough to drive to, and my dad was like, yeah, I think that we'll just stick to kickboxing.
I led the league in yellow cards and red cards because I just wanted, yeah, I wanted to fight. We were the worst team. We hadn't won a game in 4 years.
But fun fact for you, fun fact for you, my dad still played until he was about 40, soccer. He played soccer for a long time, and he used to get red carded pretty much every week, and we would be sitting home. So I get it from my dad.
So, Bill, her dad is a professional kickboxer, right?
Yeah, yeah, then, I suppose that's professional too, right?
And then he ran a fight promotion, and he had her at the door. She was the door. She was a door girl, and she said, "Dad, I want to fight." He said, "Not a fucking chance. No way." 2 years later, he throws you in there with a 19-year-old when you're 15.
Yeah, yeah. But I was winning that whole fight until I got knocked out. I was just super aggressive, running forward. I was winning the whole fight, and then I just got kneed in the liver and then straight up to the head. She went two knees in a row, and I just went out. And I was like, okay, well, let's just try again in a couple months. And my dad was like, oh, my God, I can't believe she still wants to go.
Australia?
Yeah, in Australia.
But your accent is Scottish, am I wrong?
Yeah.
No, I was born in Scotland and I lived there for a long time, and we moved to Australia when I was young, and now I just have this sort of hybrid accent going on.
But why would you fight someone who is also maybe 15 or 16? They were like a woman.
Yeah, I don't care. I just wanted to fight anybody, and my dad knew that, so.
There probably weren't a lot of other 50-year-olds that are like willing to throw down in a ring.
Well, yeah. Well, I mean, I fought a lot in high school too, so I just like looked at that as like my seventh fight by that point.
So then you have your dad runs Eternal MMA, so he's a fight promoter, and you're fighting under your dad's promotion. Now, are you getting hate for that? Is that hard to do? I would think that would be kind of hard.
Yeah, like once I started doing well, everybody would say like, you know, she's winning because her dad handpicks her opponents. I was like, I couldn't get away from it. I was like, my dad got me knocked out at 15 and knocked out at 16. Like, I don't know what you guys want me to say. Like, my dad threw me in there and was just like, fuck you, figure it out. And I did. So I started winning. And, you know, we started bringing people over from Japan. You know, I fought a girl who'd fought for one championship in my first professional fight. So I was fighting like high level girls and I still got the hate. So I just figured that, you know, everybody's going to hate me no matter what I do. But eventually I went from being Cam's daughter to he went to being Casey's dad. So that's my favorite part of all this now.
Now, what was his, I tried to find out your dad's, like, I tried to look him up. I couldn't find anything as far as like, what was his record? Was he a champion or how good was your dad?
I'm not sure about his kickboxing record because he had hundreds. He pretty much fought every weekend when I was a kid. I would go and watch him. He had one MMA fight when he was 40 and he lost that, but it was so fun to watch. And then he had a couple of boxing fights as well. And I cornered him in them as well when I was like 13, 14. And he never knew how to keep his hands up and always got hit too many times, but he was pretty good. So he just tried to be a bit too much like Anderson Silva, and he was built more like Tito. So,
You know what, man? I have a 3-year-old daughter, and I think that's really cool. You work your dad's corner, like that makes me so happy about how proud you are of your dad. You know?
Yeah, you know, I loved working my dad's corner. I did it a couple of times until he decided to finally retire, and then he started working mine, and he's only missed a couple of fights now. He'll miss this one again, unfortunately. But, you know, this was our dream for me when we were watching UFC and Phil Baroni fight when I was 8 and 9. He was my favorite. I had the robe. I had the sunglasses. I used to walk around the house, you know, like the Scottish badass, not the New York badass.
Wow.
And yeah. So.
You should call Phil right now. Available, right, Adam?
Yeah, yeah, well, yeah, 100%.
Get Phil on the show right now.
Dude, don't even.
Damn, get Phil on here. Tell him I was his first fan, probably. Probably his youngest fan.
He'll come over and live with you. If he hears that, he'll be on the first flight from Mexico. And Phil is, by the way, Phil Baroni was kind of stuck in Mexico, had a tough time recently. But like Phil Baroni style, he's now training people in Mexico. He's running a wrestling program. And he's the only guy you can just literally just drop in Mexico. And like a week later, he has like his own gym. And he seems like he's doing really well. So good for Phil Baroni. Because it didn't look that good for a while, but it looks like he's coming out on top. So King Casey, there was one fight I watched that was like, it was such a slick, it was an arm bar, but you got like, it was like a rolling Kimura to an arm bar. What was that?
Yeah, so she kept attacking that single leg and like setting back every time. And I figured it out at the end there. So I grabbed the Kimura. I had been grabbing it over and over in that fight because I didn't really have any wrestling yet. I was more of a jiu-jitsu girl. And my coach said to me in the corner, my coach at the time, his name's Pasha Stoiler. He's a big Russian man who lives in Australia now. And he literally said to me, he said, you grab that Kimura again, I'm going to slap you out the back. It's not working. So when I grabbed it that time, I was like, I know I have to finish this. So I rolled through and I just sort of grabbed her arm and pulled it as hard as I could. And she tapped, and I was really happy because I didn't get slapped.
Got the Kimura, got the armbar finish.
Yeah, armbar.
Okay, so you got it.
But she set it up through a Kimura. It was really slick.
That's still my favorite finish for sure. I don't know. I went for a flying triangle in one of my other fights. I don't know if you saw that, but the timer ran out for the round. But that would have been my favorite had I finished that. But the armbar is still my favorite.
You did the Melbourne Open. You were a gi jiu-jitsu girl, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you by bow and arrow. So was it hard transitioning from gi to no gi or gi to MMA?
Did you ever want jiu-jitsu? I did both because I got told that I wouldn't be able to get graded if I didn't wear the gi. So I wore the gi until the day I got my purple belt, and then I took it off, and I've never worn it since. But I did just get my brown belt after my last fight, so I guess that I don't really need to put on the gi so much anymore.
That's what I love about jiu-jitsu now. It's like people – like who was it? Frank Mir. He got his black belt after he snapped Tim Silva's arm. His master came just threw the black belt on after the fight. Like that's what I love about – like people – and UFC, like, they win huge fights. That's how they get their black belt. So that'll probably happen to you, too, down the road.
Yeah, I hope so. I hope so.
I'm going to show you, Bill, exactly what she did. I could probably share this. Can you guys see?
Yeah, I can see it.
Yeah.
All right, hold on. So it was pretty awesome, I'm sure.
I know this.
I never seen this before.
That's great.
Bill, how hard is that?
Well, I mean that's just you got really flexible, strong legs. Obviously, you had your ankles crossed and everything. It took her a long time to tap there. Did her arm snap?
No, her arm didn't snap. She was actually really, really strong. So that was still when I was fighting at strawweight at 115, and I'm 5'7", and she was like 5'1".
Yeah.
But so strong, and
I had it. You had it in deep when she was still on her knees, and then you get belly down, and it still took some time. I was like, God damn.
Yeah, she was really stubborn. I'm actually really good friends with her now, so,
No, you know, Casey, what was that, Bill?
I was going to say, like, everyone we have, most of the women that we have that we interview, they're usually, like, in a studio apartment with, like, a single bed with, like, one pillow, no sheets. You're in, like, a swank pad, Casey. What's your deal?
Who's the guy in the background?
Yeah. This is my boyfriend in the background.
He looks like a fighter.
Ty Guerta. He fights for Bellator. He fights.
I know him.
Yeah.
Hey, that guy came to my comedy show.
Oh yeah? Did you go to his comedy show?
Yeah.
With his ex. I'm not going to mention this because I might open up some can of worms here.
We'll move on.
So Ty's a nice guy. He's really good fighter too. Really good fighter. Yeah, Hawaiian.
Yep.
Fucking, these, dude, honestly, when in Vegas, Hawaiians clean up, Bill.
Hey, Hawaii, I feel like every time I'm on a podcast, he takes over. They see him in the back and he's so pretty and they're like, oh, who's that?
He just walks over with like no shirt on and like,
yeah, exactly. Like, stop stealing my thunder, bro.
Yeah, he's a nice guy. I like Thai a lot. So why did you, but now you were in Thailand, speaking of Thai, for 3 years?
Yeah, 2 years.
What was it like living in Thailand?
The best time of my life. I loved living in Thailand. I would still live there if COVID wasn't a thing. Yeah, it's just so peaceful, so like slow and easygoing, and you can spend all your time when you're not training at the beach, and everything's so cheap. I love Thailand. The place is great.
Now, obviously, how good did your Muay Thai get when you were there? Was it insane?
It definitely got better, but the trainers are so mean that like, you don't really want to go to Muay Thai as much, per se. I actually did a lot more kickboxing with Rafael Fiziev, who's in the UFC, obviously killing it. He was my kickboxing coach for a long time, K1. So
now, do they hit you with like bamboo and stuff, or like, why are they mean?
Yeah, they're just mean, and they make you run a lot and don't like to run, and you hit the bag a lot, and you have to skip for half an hour. It's just a lot. I definitely went sometimes, but I also feel like the K1 transitioned more into MMA, you know, especially with Rafael being an MMA fighter himself and
everything like that. Jump rope.
Yeah.
So you jump rope for half an hour. You got to run
with the big, heavy tie ropes too, not like regular ropes, like big, heavy tie ropes. So you would run 5 miles, skip for half an hour, then you would train for an hour, and then you would hit the bag for 20 minutes at the end.
Don't you have to like kick a tree, or am I just watching like some weird martial arts movies about?
We kick tires, not trees. Kick tires. But the ties kick the trees. I wasn't there for that.
But their shin gets like impervious to pain. Like all the pain endings get sensitized, right?
Yeah, and they grab their own little bamboo sticks and just smack their shins as well. So that was easier for me than kicking the trees. I wouldn't kick the trees.
Did you ever go to one of those fights where like blood gets all over you in the front row?
No, I stayed away from a lot of fights in Thailand because they all ended up being like chicken fights or like big gambling things and stuff like that. So I just sort of like went home after training and minded my business.
Were you the tallest girl in Thailand?
Well, actually, the girl I'm fighting, Antonina, trained with me in Thailand. So she was a little bit taller than me, but I was one of the tallest.
Yeah, you're like the Big Show. Now you're fighting a girl, Shevchenko, who's obviously her sister is.
I'm fighting Antonina. I'm not fighting Shevchenko. Yeah,
yes, you're fighting Antonina Shevchenko, right?
Yeah.
Her sister is considered one of the best in the world. She's really good, but she's also got a lot of holes in her game. So far, it looks like. Now you train with her?
Yeah, we train together in Tiger Muay Thai.
Wow. So you, I mean, have you guys sparred together?
Not sparred, but we wrestled and did some jujitsu and stuff like that.
You seem pretty confident about this fight, just based on your style. I feel like you're saying, oh, you're going to make easy work of her.
I know I'm going to win. I always know I'm going to win. You know, I train so hard. I've given up my whole life for the sport. You know, I train 4 times a day in camp and out of camp. I basically like break myself down to the point of exhaustion and then get up the next day and do it again. So I've been doing that since I got knocked out as a 15-year-old kid. And I feel like I'm on my way up and she's on her way out. And that's the way I'm looking at this. She's 36 years old and flies planes all day. And I'm 23 years old and hungrier than ever. So I don't think that somebody who's half in and half out is going to beat me. No way.
Yeah, no, I kind of agree with you. Now what's, why'd you pick Extreme Couture?
Because he was there. No, I'm just kidding. I don't know, like moving to America, I'd had issues training with girls in Australia in the past because girls are a little bit, emotional, should I say. In Thailand, not so much, but in Australia, I know that they were. And then obviously my choices were Extreme or Syndicate, and there's a lot of girls at Syndicate. And I just felt like I would be better with the boys. So I decided to move to Extreme. And then I got amazing coaches as soon as I moved to Extreme. I am with Eddie Baracco and Eric Nixit, who are two of the best. And then obviously Casey Halstead came into my life as well. And I'm at 10th Planet with him. So I have a pretty good group of people. Yeah, I don't work with Ray as much, but he's at the gym too, and he throws little pieces of knowledge out every so often. So,
yeah. Do you train with Misha?
I have trained with her, just not recently because she's had a couple of fights coming up, and so have I, and we kind of don't have similar opponents. And when I'm in camp, I like to pick the absolute hardest person that's similar to my opponent and spar with them. So for this fight, I've picked an 170-pound Southpaw male to spar the whole camp. So that's Ooh. Who I've been sparring with. He's an up-and-coming amateur. His name is Adam, and he tries to take me out every day. He gave me a little bit of a shiner the other day, but I try and take him out too. So
hey, Ty, does Ty know about this?
Yeah, Ty comes and watches.
Okay.
He loves it.
No, I met Ty. He's the nicest guy, but he's super shy, polite. How did he get you? Because a lot of guys out there are very shy that watch our show, and they would love to have a beautiful girl who could fight like yourself.
Get Ty next to her? Can we see him together?
How did Ty land the
game? He's way prettier than me. I don't even know what you're talking about. Look how good looking this man is. Hold on.
What's up, brother?
What's up, Ty? How did Ty land the kick?
Babies right away. What are you doing? Don't waste any time.
What's your secret? Straight up, the Instagram game is strong.
So you hit her up on Instagram and you said, hey, you look really good. We train at the same gym together.
So we actually started talking before I moved here. So he would send little replies to my stories, just like almost like platonic and everything, just like little, oh, I like that book or something like that. And I'd be like, this is too slow. So I just stepped it up a notch, and I was like, hey, like, I'll see you soon. I'm coming to Vegas. And then I came to Vegas, and basically from day one.
And where was your first date?
The gym, kind of.
So you're fighting October 2nd against Shevchenko. Ty, when are you fighting again?
I don't know. We'll see. I broke my hands in that last fight, so I'm just recovering that from that rain. I haven't been back to training since. So
notice he said hands, like both.
Yeah, Ty's
broke his hands.
Ty is a fucking badass. Good for you,
really,
man.
Both broke hands and you kept fighting? That's crazy.
Yeah, man. I broke them both in the first round, and then I broke it a second time in the second round.
Wow. Yeah, no, Ty's no joke. So where can people follow both of you?
Ty.savage.mma on Instagram, Twitter.
Yeah, I'm King Casey MMA on everything as well. So.
Yes, well, keep it up, King. When you become the champion, don't get too big for us.
Yeah.
Thank you guys so much. I'm performing in Vegas October 7th. I got a big
comedy. That's my birthday.
Happy birthday.
Come check you out for her birthday.
Perfect. Yeah. It's me and a
There you go. He picks the cheapest present ever for me. We come watch you for free. Thanks, babe. Hey,
it'll be the best.
You see the way my paycheck is set up right now.
Of course. Well, thank you guys so much, and take care, guys.
Thank you, guys. Take it easy.
Thank you. Nice girl.
Nice girl.
Yeah, I would not want to fuck being on her bad side, though. Holy shit.
Good-looking couple.
Yeah.
That's a pimp-ass move. He basically, he knew she was fixing to move to America, and he laid the groundwork. So when she moved, of course, he was going to be the guy waiting for her, you know?
Of course. Speaking of the guy, we have David Michaud here, the Bulldog. So I don't know if you know this, Bill Dawes, but David Michaud, the man, he's from Sioux Falls. Man. I'll tell you his whole story. He's from the reservation.
You already got it wrong.
Okay. You're in from South Dakota.
Yes.
Yes.
Pine Ridge,
South Dakota. Native American, badass. Won his first couple fights. Parents. He was fighting professional at like age 15. He played in the state of wrestling.
18.
He played football. Right. He went to college. He was the man. Like everyone was like trying out for the Ultimate Fighter. He was winning. Until the third round, then he got caught. Everyone was like, David's our hope. The whole reservation came out to, like, see him, blah, blah, blah. He ended up losing, right? It wasn't good. Then he made it back into the UFC. He won a bunch of big fights. He came out walking to the cage to Taylor Swift, right? Then he had a couple of rough ones. He blood everywhere. All his fights were just bloody. I mean, just gushing blood. So then he goes into, I think he fought maybe in Bellator. He got into the PFL. He barely got in the PFL. He lost during the regular season. He came in as an alternate, made the finals, the fucking finals, and was winning against Ray Cooper. Was fucking tagging him up, and then got caught. So he lost in the finals, right? But it's okay.
So I wasn't an alternate. I made the playoffs. I lost my first fight. I got finished in like 15 seconds with a body kick by the tall, lanky kickboxer, Sadabu.
Yeah.
Then I got to finish my next fight. And then in playoffs, I would think I was the fifth or sixth seed. And then was losing that second fight, semis, two fights, one night. Was losing after the second round. And ended up turning around, beating the guy up in the third. And then, fighting against Cooper. Had him staggered. Had him hurt. And then he turned it around on me.
So he lost, but he still made about $500,000, maybe $750,000 that year, based on the fact that he got so. He made some money. He made like $20,000. All right, so then
I made like enough to pay my insurance for the week.
So then he's supposed to come back, right? As the favorite, he's a week out from fighting Rory McDonald. This was going to be Rory's first fight in PFL.
Good fight.
He finds out he's got some kind of like brain problem.
Heart.
What was it?
Heart.
Heart issues. Okay. Heart issues, a regular heartbeat, and now he can't fight ever again, right? Is that?
Yeah.
He's done.
Wait. Time out. You're not talking about like just arrhythmia, right? You're not talking about like.
No. So I have it's called a bicuspid aortic valve, and with a dilated aortic root. So my aorta is all stretched out. So they're worried about if I get my heart rate too high or if I get hit in the chest, my aorta will explode. So you hear about like high school kids dropping dead on a football field. Like that's what I got.
So
it gets worse over time. So it wasn't always as bad as it is now, but I mean, we never would have known about it because before all my EKGs, all my heart tests were all good. Like EKG is good, so they don't check out your heart. And then I actually got COVID, and that messed up my EKG. So then they had to look at it, and then it got to where there's like, dude, there's no way.
So like, all his fights, he fought with a bad heart, and then made it as far. Imagine if he had a.
It gets worse. It gets worse throughout. So my valve stays open. And they was saying that I get like 60 to 65% of my blood flow. So they was asking me about like getting my fingers or toes going numb. And I'm like, yeah, I mean, after all my fights, my feet would be just like super white and like feeling cold after a fight. Yeah, your blood's not pumping the way it needs to be.
So, Bill, this guy is the nicest guy, most humble guy. I've known him for years. Dave is the kind of guy that like, I mean, he crazy over at the lab, but all those monsters, they love him. This is how much people love him. He's like scared to fly. For some reason, he can't fly, right? He's a huge pussy when it comes to flying.
Yeah.
He has to drive all the way from Arizona to New Jersey for his fights. And his coaches travel with him. Ben Henderson travels with him. Ben's not even getting paid half the time. Ben's like, I'm going with him. That's how much Ben fucking – I remember I told Ben.
Yeah, so that was before – that was at your show. Yeah, we was at your show. And so before this fight, when I was supposed to fight Rory, and he's like, so who's going with you? I was like, dude, I don't know yet. And he's like, I'll go. And I'm like, man. So for PFL, we had to be there. It was going to be 17-day quarantine. So that's 2.5 weeks there, plus 2 days to drive to Jersey. And I'm like, dude, you got 4 kids. Like, I can't take you away from your kids. And he's like, no. He's like, no, I'm going.
Yeah, that's how cool Ben Henderson is. I was there. I told Ben about his fight, Ben, and he's like, he didn't know. And Ben's like, no, I'm going. And Ben, he's like, but you're not even really, but we're not, you're my coach. But he's like, nope. When are we leaving? He's like, we're leaving in 3 hours. Like,
so my thing for me personally, I would just not ask guys who had kids, you know, because it's like 3 weeks away from your kids, and all his kids are super young. And he's like, no, I'll be there for you. And that's how much
everyone loves this guy. Bill, he's like the coolest teammate, and he's strongest. Dude, his dad had him fighting grown men at like 15 years old.
Guys coming straight out of jail. One of the guys I fought, so in South Dakota, no blood test at this time. There was no commission. So I remember I was fighting at the Sturgis Rally. Got some Viking guy, bald head. He looks like he was on Sons of Anarchy. He could have just the long goatee and get done fighting him. He's all bloody. He's busted up. And then they announced, I think I was 16 at this time. They're like, he lost to the 16-year-old David Michaud. And then that guy's like, I lost to a 16-year-old. I was beating guys' asses in prison. And I'm like, I just bloodied up some guy who just got out of prison. Like,
I didn't even know any moves. Like, I basically all I knew how to wrestle and box. He didn't know any jiu-jitsu.
Overhands and headlocks.
Yeah,
we didn't have any jiu-jitsu gyms within probably 300 miles of the rest. So
wow. You're 16. You beat the – I would have gone back to high school and just picked fights with everyone in school.
After the fights at the rally, all the bikers, they'll throw cash in. So after that fight, I made like $250. And I think I'm balling. I'm like, let's, you know. Yeah.
Dude, this guy – I mean, dude, his reservation is like 99% alcoholism. Like, he is the pride. When I say like this dude – he's like the I don't know. He's like, who are you? You're like the
I'm me.
But you're like the Ronaldo of Sioux Falls. Like, dude, whenever I have him on the podcast,
Ronaldo is like a multi-millionaire. I'm like $100 in there.
Dude, whenever I have him on the podcast, like my whole timeline is people, and I know like they have like the coolest Native American names. It's like girls like beautiful girls who are like, they're like in the 20s, and the names are like,
yeah,
like Runny Mountain or something, you know, something, you know, and it's always like, yeah.
One of my old teammates when I was fighting amateur, his last name was Kill Small, and his fight name was Brandon Kills All Kill Small, and everyone loved it, and it was sick. It's a sick name.
What's your Native American name? You must have one, right?
Ozuye Wiksha Ohitika.
What does that mean? Something? Like,
brave warrior man.
Brave warrior man.
And he's legit. Brave warrior man.
By the way, when Adam goes, this guy OD'd and he ended up in jail and somebody beat him up in an alley. But he's like singing your praises. So just know that Adam usually is not this.
I have to build David up because he was depressed. Like after I talked, I called him up after he found out. And I'm like, hey, you want to come on the podcast? He's like, honestly, I'm like beyond depressed. I haven't left my house in like a month. Like I don't want to see anybody.
I couldn't even answer. Like I didn't even answer when he called. He left a voicemail, and I just hit him back through text. Cause it still sucks, you know. Like when I'm cornering guys, we're at the fights, and I'm holding mitts for them. It's like, God damn, you know. Right now, it's thinking like I could have been getting ready for a rematch with Cooper, or I could have been getting ready to fight Magomed. Like,
but David, you made it so far, man. I mean. Look at! I mean, you tried out for the Ultimate Fighter, didn't make it. Still made the UFC.
Made it to the show,
CFL, made the finals. You would have won the finals. Look how he fucking destroyed Rory McDonald. He beat the shit out of Rory McDonald.
It was not a close fight.
Like,
and
you know, David, I understand it didn't end the way you wanted it to end, Dave. But like, talk about like a guy who needs to keep his head up because you're such an inspiration, man.
And also, David, this is the one thing I've talked to fighters, they tell me, it never ends the way you want it to end. You know what I mean? It never, I mean, look at Anderson Silva. It didn't end the way he wanted to end, obviously. Like so it's always going to end.
He's like, got a great second act, you know?
But the point is like it just ended 5 years earlier for you than it would have anyway. So you're just at a place earlier and maybe healthier now and younger and smarter.
And he's got a hot wife. Well, his girlfriend. He won't marry her for some reason. She's like a 10. I mean, she's like a super feminist. She sends my kid feminist books. books in the mail. My wife loves
every birthday. Every birthday.
Every birthday we get these like women who run the world. There's like, you know, we get like Why Men Suck or something. You know, we get all these books for kids.
I don't think it was that
bad. No. So by the way, so you have a job now. What's your job?
I'm actually at the wing place right now, Bally Wings.
You're working at Bally Wings?
I'm learning the biz, yep.
Okay, all right. Do you like it? Is it fun? Do you hate it? Can you say it?
Yeah, I like it a lot. You know, the owners are good. I would eat here weekly, honestly, before. Now I try to only eat here weekly since I work here. But I'm still working at the gym. I actually just got done holding mitts before I came over here. I taught a striking class 8 to 9, then I was holding mitts 9 to 11, then I'm here 11 to 3, back at the gym, probably like 3 to 6 or 3 to 7 most nights.
Your gym's got some studs, man. You got Sean O'Malley at your gym. You got that other kid. What's his name? Was a fucking the other karate guy who's awesome.
Tyler Phillips.
And
Jared Cannonier just won.
Yeah, you got the Killer Gorilla, and then you got that kid from Tucson who's also Chris.
Casey Kenny.
Yeah,
he trains with Kerry also. That's who he was with before. I mean, yeah. We got a ton of guys. You know, I just cornered at 35 in the UFC. We got Mario Bautista. He was supposed to fight. He ended up being COVID week up, couldn't fight. I just cornered a guy in Bellator, Mike Hamill. Bellator's coming to Phoenix next month, and Ben Henderson and his wife are going to be fighting. Ben and Maria will both be on the card.
Wow.
And who else? I'm going to be cornering Rob Emerson, you know, old OG. He's fighting Crazy Horse Bennett in a bare knuckle.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. By the way, Rob Emerson, by the way, people don't realize this. Rob Emerson went to jail, right, back in his, like, 20s. His first fight out of jail, his first fight ever, was against Jens Pulver.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Who was the champion? He had he had his picture in his jail cell. Like he had his picture from a magazine, from like Fight Magazine or something. Like what? Who the fuck would sanction that fight? But that's the crazy.
There was no sanctions then.
No. You know? No. But you look happy though, man. You look happy.
And David, do you get a lot of joy out of coaching people? I know a lot of people who transition, you know, it's even more satisfying for some people, you know.
I mean, honestly, like, I like to fuck people.
You still
up,
got the so, fight.
Like, that's more yeah. fun, you know. But I like to be there for my guys. Guys have been there for me, helping guys out. I enjoy it, but it's not, you don't get the same kind of rush. It's honestly more nerve-wracking. Yeah. It's like harder on the body. I get more anxiety when other guys are fighting. When I'm fighting, I'm like just flat. I'm perfect until I get in the cage, no nerves. And then once I get in the cage, I just feel confident. When other guys are fighting, we're like holding. I'm like, oh man, what if I say something and then he gets him knocked out, you know?
Dude, this guy, like, he lost in 15 seconds, right, to a body shot. That was crazy. He afterwards, I'm like, hey, David, man, keep your head up. He goes, please make jokes about me.
I'm like, dude, it happens. Fuck. You know?
Different level, man. By the way, your nose looks like it can't take any more shots, though. No offense. I didn't realize.
It's solid.
You have cauliflower nose.
Cauliflower eyebrow, too, I think. This one's all.
When are you going to marry Emma Hermany Horses? When are you going to marry her?
I don't know. We'll see.
She's such a great girl.
We'll let you know.
Such a sweetheart. She's a teacher.
Is she not big enough wigwam? What's the problem?
No, we got teepees up north.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So, dude, man, I mean, I'm sorry that happened, bro, but I'm happy they caught it. Like, if you were the first person to die after a fucking fight, like in the PFL, I would have
been like a major American promotion, it would have been.
Yeah, that would have been worse. Talk about Native Americans having no fucking luck. Can you imagine that?
I think six cardiologists, and it's all been the same thing. I went to University of Texas at Houston, and they was doing an exercise study on stuff like what I got. They actually kind of helped me out. They said I could get my heart rate a little higher than what the baseline was. Because I was like, dude, I was getting my heart rate over like up to 200 twice a day. Now they're saying don't go over 120. But then I'm saying, you know, well, it doesn't. And they're like, well, it doesn't. I mean, it doesn't until it does, and then it blows up. So it is what it is.
Possible, David. It's also possible that, like, there's always advances in medicine every year. You know what I mean? It's possible that in a couple of years, maybe there'll be an opportunity to do other studies to help, you know?
So, like, before I announced it, I was kind of going back and forth whether I should announce it, like, let them know what it is. And I'm like, well, everyone's going to be asking. So I announced it. And then after that, I got, like, probably over 70 messages from people who were like, hey, I have this. And then some of them were fucking sad. And it's like, hey, my dad, he's a rancher. He died when he was fixing fence from this. Wow. But they never checked, you know, he never got an echo on his heart because he never needed it. Like, it doesn't show up on anything unless you look at the valve. And then he died, so it's good. And it's like, Jesus, fuck, man. I didn't realize, and they say like 1% or less than 1%, but so many people, and announcing it actually helped me out because I got hooked up with the John Ritter Aortic Health Foundation.
Oh, and, wow.
So he died from aortic dissection or aortic rupture or something. I'm not 100% sure, but so they hit me up, and so they've been giving me resources and stuff. So that was good. You know, a lot of good came out of me letting people know what it was. And then I get less questions about it.
Well, listen, man, I mean, to me, you're a hero. I honestly, I know we're friends, but I look up to you so much. And, you know, I definitely miss watching you fight, but I'm happy that they caught it. Like, because, like I said.
When you come to Phoenix again, try to come around the fight. Well, I guess the fight will be on a Friday night, though.
When is it?
I think it's the 16th.
Of October?
October, yeah, next month.
I'll try. I know my wife's going to France with her mom, so I have the kid from like the 7th to like the 17th. Anyway, maybe I should take a road trip with my daughter.
Emmy watch.
Dude, this guy, like, by the way, talk about like bad eating habits. This guy would like lose like 30 pounds. We would go out to eat. He'd have me like cake, milkshakes. I'm like, what are you fighting? He's like, in 2 weeks.
We did have ice cream that night, yeah, after the show. But that was, I mean, that's just once a week, you know. That was a cheat. That was definitely a cheat. Whenever I'm in camp, I was very strict. Then I have like one cheat.
I hope you don't know. So, like, Arizona, by the way, is like the mecca of fighting, Bill, because they all went to his gym, the lab. And then all of a sudden, like, Cejudo and them started their own gym. And then another guy
Cejudo was already at Fight Ready or kind of on his own. Cejudo was never at the lab.
And then, like, Dracar and his girlfriend are, like, training in their garage. So there's, like, all these, like, and then O'Malley does his whole thing. There's, like, it's like West Side Story in, like, Scottsdale, which is, like, Scottsdale's known for, like, swingers and cougars and, like, rich women.
Yeah, I mean, Scottsdale's different.
But isn't it crazy what's going on with that? Like, but I went to his like sparring day. David invited me to watch sparring. Dude, they legit. It's a fight club on Saturday, like 11 o'clock. They're just going at it. I mean, everywhere you look, like, and I was watching O'Malley, who fights exactly like he fights in the like everywhere you look, people are just throwing down. It was crazy. And Ben Henderson, right? Ben Henderson is fighting like, I think Johnny Cage. It was like somebody really good. Yeah. And he's sitting there winning every round against everybody while telling his wife to pick up like the, hey, go to the cleaners, make sure you get 3 milk. I was like, what the fuck? This is that. Am I right? Didn't that happen?
Oh, yeah. He's a different cat. He can do a lot of things.
Yeah, and then you realize like how good Chandler looks against Ben Henderson. Well, not the second time because that was a closer. But you're like, man, this is a different level because like going to that gym. I'm like, Ben Henderson's the greatest fighter of all time. Like, and he's probably in the top 50 of all time. But you just realize like how good these other guys. Like, wow, it's crazy. It's crazy.
And he'll do like 5 straight in the cage any day. He'll just go any day of the week. If he gets a fight, he wants to do as many rounds as he can.
So you say 5, so he'll go 25 rounds in a row?
25 minutes, yeah. No problem. Like, any day of the week. He won't even have to be trained. He'll just roll straight in there and do 5 straight with 5 fresh guys. No problem.
Do you think he has a chance of getting back to the top, Ben?
Yeah, I mean, he's got this fight against Primus, who was a champ. I guess I don't think he's in the ratings anymore. I mean, it's so tough, though, with, you know, what's his name? Pitbull just lost to McKee, and McKee says he wants to go up. So, like, it's hard to say that McKee shouldn't get that shot first. But I don't know. It's hard to say. And then the other Pitbull, he's rated number one, but obviously he wouldn't fight his brother. And Ben has a win against him off of, like, a checked kick. But, so, the only guys Ben's lost to has been Chandler at 55.
Yeah.
I mean,
and that last fight, he was looking great. That was the best he was looking in a while. And
then he was doing really good on the stand-up. And then, I mean, Chandler's just Chandler. You know, he's so explosive. He just explodes right in with 1-2, like, faster than any other 55er, except for Pitbull.
Well, listen, I know we talked that we were going to talk about fight predictions, but I know you got to get back. Listen, David, I love you, man. Where can people find you?
Find me at Valley Wings or the MMA Lab. No, I mean, I don't know. What's my Insta? Bulldog155. And on Twitter, it's Bulldog_170, I think. So, you know, if you want to come see me talk shit about Adam or something, then Twitter. If you want to see memes, I'm a pretty good meme guy on Insta.
I love it. Bill, anything you want to say to the great David Michaud?
Hey, man. Honored to meet you, man. Adam speaks so highly of you. So you're a great guy, and best of luck with you, man.
Awesome. I appreciate it, brother. Nice to meet you.
No problem. Maria, your girl. Take care, man.
All right. See you guys.
Yeah, dude. I was like, fuck. I was so bummed for that guy. I was so bummed, man. That was such – I could, you know.
Because I'm sure he's doing everything in his power to be like, wait, I need another opinion, another opinion, I need another opinion. And, like, everyone's just like, nope.
He's also a guy that, like, wears his heart on his sleeve. Like, he's not the kind of guy that has – he has no poker face, that guy. Like, you know.
It's weird. You're like the big brother sort of, like, guru Buddha of a lot of these guys, I feel like. They all, like, look up to you and you kind of help talk them out of bad situations, you know?
I don't know. I mean, I coach. I coach, you know, I would tell him – these guys are also a lot of really young. Like, he might not be – I mean, that first girl was 23. I mean, I'm literally 20 years older. Like, when I was 21 years old, she was one, you know? So, obviously, like, when it comes to fight experience and the yada yada, they're light years ahead of me, or I have none. But, I mean, like, my wife's 31, you know, and I'm 43. And, like, there are sometimes, like, I can see things that, like, she can't, you know, I just know people. I'm like,
yeah.
I remember we had, like, we had somebody that she was lending her car to help the person get it to work. And I'm like, they're not going to give back that car. And she's like, oh, no, they will. They'll go. I'm like, listen, like, like, that car is not, like, I don't want to say, like, I know, like, bad parts of people. Like, I know sometimes instinct and how people think and this and that or why.
Yeah.
And sometimes, like, I kind of wish I didn't have that part. But part of me sometimes wishes I had, like, the same viewpoint as my daughter, who's 3, who, like, you know. Like, we were watching, first of all, it was pretty funny. So we're coaching yesterday, and the school, because I said I'm not coaching this year because I live an hour away, 45 minutes. I live in Winnetka, and I got to drive to Brentwood to coach at 3 and at 5. So you know how that traffic is. And also I got my daughter. So then they told me, like, well, what if we have kids watch your daughter? Well, we'll give kids credit. And I'm like, so, okay. So right away, they're going to teach my daughter dance and, like, these middle school kids. So within 10 minutes yesterday, my daughter's crying and the kids are crying. They were racing in the parking lot and a woman got up and a car was, like, 10 feet away. But a woman's like, why are you yelling, letting a kid run? So they started screaming at them. And I'm like, you know, I'm trying to coach wrestling. I'm like, what the fuck happened? But I'm trying to, like, she's okay. And the kids, I think that's different seeing little girls and little boys. The little girls were crying. She felt so, I'm sorry, I'm sorry. A 12-year-old girl was bawling, and I'm like, it's okay. You didn't look. Why don't you guys just go race on the field?
Away
from the parking lot. But so I'm coaching, and my daughter goes, why are you pretending to be a coach? I was like, no, I'm really the coach. Like, I'm not pretending to be the coach. That was really cute. I forgot why I even brought that up. About life experience or something, you know, I don't know.
Well, yeah. About, like, how you're, like, kind of like a teacher, and, like, I feel like you're sort of like this mentor for a lot of these guys, you know. They kind of look look to you for some, like, stability in their crazy emotional landscapes, I feel sometimes.
A lot of people, they've been to my shows too, you know. I mean, you see someone on stage, you feel like they know what they're talking about. I don't, but I, you know, I look at them and, like, holy shit, I mean, this guy made the highest level. I think the UFC still, and MMA hasn't reached its peak. It's not like the NBA or the NFL. You meet an NFL player, you're like, I can't believe that guy made the NFL or the NBA. Like, and I think that MMA guys, that is amazing, you know. But that girl is 23 years old that we talked to. And, you know, she's young. I mean, think about how young that is.
I mean, if I were into managing people, I would be all over that. Imagine the money you could make off that girl. She looks like that. She's funny. She's smart. Yeah. She's got the accent. She's an undefeated fighter. I mean, that's like a cha-ching, ching, ching cash cow.
She's got power. And she's also from a place where there aren't that many fighters. So
yeah.
From Australia. So I mean, Robert Whittaker is like a massive star in Australia.
Yeah.
Would Robert Whittaker be a star in the U.S.? Yes. Would he be as big a star as he is in Australia? Like, no. Conor McGregor, if he was from Ohio, like, would not be the same Conor McGregor. I'm sorry, but, you know.
When he went to Ireland, yeah.
It's also fucked up also how – I used to have to say, like, when Ricky Hatton would box in the U.S., like, all of Manchester would come and, like, flood Vegas, right? Yeah. I mean, it was crazy. When McGregor would fight. Could you think of one athlete in the U.S. that when he goes over the seas, anyone follows him? Except for, like, people he trains?
Yeah, I don't know. Exactly.
I think we're just spoiled or lazy or don't care as much or don't have the same type of pride in being American. But I don't know. I can't think of one fighter. I mean, even when, like, Tyson went to Japan, he was, like, the only one.
I was going to go to Japan to see him.
I mean, it's just kind of sad. I think in like some ways, I kind of wish that we had more, like, you know. But we're also bigger, you know. But even like,
we have a lot more things to celebrate. They have like potatoes and Conor McGregor. You know what I mean?
That's gonna get people are gonna get mad at that. By the way, McGregor.
But my grandparents are from Ireland. I can say that shit.
Yeah, of course. but yeah, man. Well, that is our podcast today. What do you have coming up?
Well, I might as well plug. I'm headlining a place called Snappers Comedy Snappers Bar Grill and Comedy Show
in Florida,
in Palm Beach, Florida.
Didn't they put you on the flyer by accident?
I thought they did because they called me Dill Dawes, and I was like, "Is it a joke?" But no, it's a real show I'm doing. I have no idea. This guy was like, "Hey, man, I want to book you." I was like, "Hey, why not?" But it's Palm Beach, Florida. I don't know anyone there, so if anyone watching this. It's from Palm Beach or that area.
Well, just so you know, there's a huge fight camp, American Top Team. You can get Colby Covington to come. Well, he's now at Masters MMA.
Yeah,
there's a whole Hector Lombard is out there.
Okay, here we go.
Joanna Jędrzejczyk, Dustin Poirier. If you want. Yeah, I mean, if you want, I can tag people and tell them to come see you.
Hey, man.
You know, that's what I do. I'm in Minnesota this week. So I just go to like, I figure out what, you know, who's in Minnesota that like trains. People that train usually come out and they're the best crowd. Maybe they're happier. Yeah. Maybe they're happier in life. They're more into like laughing. I think MMA fighters and comedians, we're the same. We're all people that refuse to like get a real job. And we want to like live our passion. You know, and have fun while doing it.
Yeah.
I mean, hopefully it will. Anyway, this has been a lot of fun. Thank you, Bill.
Thank you, Adam.
If you're in Minnesota this week, I am at the House of Comedy in Minnesota this week. And then in October, I gave the guy your number if he gets in contact with you. Funny is Funny Comedy Club in Lansing, Michigan. And then also in Vegas, October 7th, big show. I can't really announce it now because it's going to be on Fight Pass and yada, yada, yada. But it's a big deal. And then, so thank you guys so much, and take care.
Bye-bye.